Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Dr. Cherie Trotter is a researcher, writer and co-director of the Indigenous Coalition for Israel and co-founder of the Holocaust and Anti-Semitism Foundation, Aotearoa, New Zealand. Now, if you remember, late last week, we had Vanessa Beely, independent journalist based in the Middle East. She was beaming in from Damascus, Syria, giving her a big picture view of the Middle East conflict, an update on that view. And following that, we thought we would invite Dr. Cherie Trotter onto the program to discuss ceasefire talks underway in Doha. And of course, there's the US arms deal with Israel. So, Dr. Trotter, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on this morning.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
First up, I want to ask you about this. A 2021 survey on anti-Semitism in, you say, my own nation, found that 63% of New Zealanders held at least one anti-Semitic view, and some 6% held nine or more anti-Semitic views based on 18 questions posed to expose anti-Semitic ideas. Should that come as any surprise here in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
Well, I think it's surprising in some ways, but not surprising in other ways. And the thing is, in New Zealand, that we have a very small Jewish community. And so a lot of New Zealanders don't actually have any contact with Jewish people. And we don't have the more visibly kind of Orthodox Jewish person around for people to associate with Jewishness. So the kind of anti-Semitism, then you've got to wonder, where does that come from? I think some of it is inherited from the culture, and that goes back centuries, actually, to our literature, you know, through Shakespeare, through Dickens, through all kinds of things that have become part of culture. When you hear people say, oh, you've been Jewed, and, you know, this is something that kids might say at school or in the workplaces, and they don't actually associate it with Jewish people. It's just a phrase that they've adopted. So there's that kind of thing going on. But I think one of the alarming things that we've seen since 7th of October is just a skyrocketing of anti-Semitism in New Zealand as well as around the rest of the world. And what that looks like is kids, particularly in schools, being told Hitler should have finished the job, and kids coming home, a friend of ours, his son came home with a black eye. And I think particularly in schools, it's very concerning to see this kind of anti-Semitism, but not just in schools, also social media is the area where anti-Semitic attack has become, it feels like it's become normalized.
I remember back when I was a kid at school, and we're going back a long way, because I'm in my early 60s now, it was the anti-Semitism that was obvious was when anyone talked about money. That's what I remember. Nothing much more than that. We were conscious of the Holocaust. Yes. And knew how horrific that was. I mean, no exaggeration, we were. But there was that always that kind of joking or point being made about money.
Yes, well, we started to see a rise in other kinds of anti-Semitism through the COVID years. So there were a lot of conspiracy theories going around, and people were kind of propagating these ideas that there was a Jewish conspiracy, that there was a connection with the Rothschilds. And of course, Rothschild is like a trigger word for the anti-Semites. And so even then we were seeing this upsurge. But the sort of anti-Semitism we've seen now is that crossover between anti-Zionism, anti-Israelism, and it crosses very quickly over into anti-Semitism, because it's not just policies of Israel that's been criticized or decisions that are being made. Actually, Jewish people are coming under attack because of that association, and that's anti-Semitism.
Is there a distinction between Jewishness and Zionism?
Well, they're different concepts. Yeah. Jewishness can be defined in many different ways, and I'm not Jewish, so I'm hesitant to, make...
But the nationalist movement does kind of trigger people into a certain opinion space, let's say?
Sure. Well, Zionism, you can say, goes back thousands of years. Zion is a place, it's a hill in Jerusalem. It's a place, has been a place of longing for Jewish people for centuries. Of course, the word is used often in the scriptures, in the Jewish scriptures, and it's synonymous with Jerusalem, with Israel, and those sorts of ideas. But the political movement of Zionism started in the 19th century, the form that led to the establishment of the State of Israel. And that was really a response to anti-Semitism in Europe, with Theodor Herzl becoming so disillusioned. Theodor Herzl, interesting to note, he tried everything to be assimilated, to be accepted in Austria, where he was born. And then later he worked in France as a journalist. And when he witnessed the Dreyfus trial, that was like the final straw for him. And he realized that there was nothing he was going to do to be accepted in Europe, in these European communities. And he decided that what Jews needed was a state of their own. So he was the founder, you know, he's acknowledged as the founder of the Zionist movement. So Zionism really, it's, I would argue it's an indigenous movement. It's a movement of self-determination of the Jewish people who are the indigenous people of the land of Israel.
Two developments right up to date. New ceasefire talks in Doha, they've been described as showing a promising start. What are your thoughts on the challenges Israel faces in implementing any agreement, particularly regarding Hamas's refusal to participate directly and accusations of new conditions being added? And of course, the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, which is very provocative thing to do. Can understand why it might have happened, but that ratchets up the tension as well. So what are your thoughts on these new ceasefire talks, if you've been following them?
Well, it does come at a very fraught time in the situation over there for the last couple of weeks since the attack on Ismail Haniyeh and his killing. Of course, there's been this sense of tension about what Iran is going to do in response to that. And there was a lot of concern that in the lead up to the Jewish holiday of Tisha B'Av, which was on the 12th, 13th of this month, that there would be an attack on that day because that was the threat that they were hearing. It's a highly significant day. It's actually the day, or it's a day of fasting, a day of mourning, and it commemorates the destruction of the Jewish temples, both in the Babylonian period and in the Roman period. And so this is a national day of mourning. And Israel's enemies have a habit of attacking on these national days, on these Jewish holidays. If you think back to the Yom Kippur War, Yom Kippur was this Jewish holiday. Even October the 7th came at the end of a Jewish holiday of Simchat Torah. So early in this last week, there was a lot of apprehension about what was going to happen. And even now, there's still a lot of tension in the air about what Iran is going to do, and possibly some surprise that Iran hasn't acted yet. And so there are various theories about what is going on there. Some are saying it's a deliberate delay because Iran is putting in place countermeasures. Some are saying that this is actually effective deterrence strategy on behalf of Israel. If you remember back to April, Iran launched an attack on Israel, 300 rockets and drones. And Israel's response was to actually go into Iran and take out a radar from their nuclear missile site. And this has happened a number of times, this sort of strategy. For example, the Houthi drone strike on Tel Aviv very recently, which killed an Israeli and landed very close to the US embassy. Israel responded to that by taking out Yemen's port, which was the lifeline to Iranian armaments and a major hub for its oil exports. And so one interesting thing about Iran is that its new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, is a moderate. He's a reformer, and there are news reports that he has asked their supreme leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, to refrain from attacking Israel. So there's a lot of theories going on at the moment. I mean, some commentators are saying that Iran is actually a paper tiger. But I think the main threat from Israel's point of view is what's happening with Hezbollah in the north. And that really is, I think, quite a worry for Israel.
How vulnerable do you think Israel is? Because, okay, US has arms deals in place with Israel, but that takes time to work through. They've got shipping in the area now, military shipping. So in the short term, and Iran's next move is unknown, but they do seem to have quite sophisticated weapons, though that could be a bluff. I get that. Israel are incredibly vulnerable right now, aren't they?
Well, if you look at what's happening in Hezbollah up north with Hezbollah, there is great concern about that. Of course, Hezbollah has been bombing the north. The north is in a terrible state right now. It's been bombing for months since the 7th of October, and there are estimates of between 60 to 90,000 residents in the north who have been evacuated from the north. And I don't know if you've seen it, but Hezbollah has just put out a promotional video where they've unveiled their underground missile city. And it's very impressive. It showcases their precision missiles, which are ready for launch. And the tunnel is huge. It's actually their command center, which is capable of transporting large weapons, mobile rocket launchers, hiding thousands of terrorists. They've obviously spent hundreds of millions on setting up this infrastructure there. And so Hezbollah could launch thousands of missiles, rockets, drones, and mortars each day for many days. And I think when you're seeing this gathering of forces to Israel, we've got to look at the wider conflict that Israel is surrounded by these enemies. Hezbollah in the north is a huge threat to Israel. And they've been saying that for months, that Israel is the real danger rather than Hamas in the south. But you've also got the Houthis over on the side there, and then you've got Syria. You've also got a lot going on in the West Bank area. So Israel is fighting on all fronts.
Yeah, so regional escalation is kind of inevitable, isn't it?
It looks that way at the moment.
Yeah. And then that brings in the question of, hate to say it, tactical nukes, because if you're being attacked on all fronts and your back is against the wall, you've got to use what you can use, right? And that would be the next logical upgrade in the conflict, which is, well, you're not really worth bearing thinking about, really, is it?
No, we don't really want to think about it.
No. It just feels a bit grim, the whole thing, all round.
Yeah, it does look grim. It does look grim. And I think the West needs to kind of wake up and understand what this conflict is. Israel is fighting radical Islamist terrorism, and Iran is the head of it's called the head of the snake. Iran is the head of the snake, and these are all proxies of Iran: Hezbollah, Hamas, Houthis. They're all proxies of Iran. The ideology is the same. It's to create a caliphate. Israel is the Western-style democracy in the Middle East that needs to be taken care of, destroyed, and that has been Hamas's goal all along. If you look at its charter, that is Iran's goal. Iran sees the US as the big Satan, and Israel is the little Satan. So Israel is the first step on the way to getting rid of this Western-style democracy. It is radical Islam that Israel is fighting, and I think the West does not understand that. We have this habit of West-blaining, of trying to explain the Middle East from our own perspective, which is completely different, I have to say. We want to see everything as colonialism. If there is colonialism, it is Arabic-Islamic colonialism in the Middle East. And you can see that by what is the dominant language in the Middle East.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Cherie Trotter, for coming on RCR and giving your view. Really interesting to listen to. And maybe we'll talk again. Thanks again.
Thank you.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.